Readers Entertainment Radio, where variety is the spice of life.
Good evening, and welcome to this week's edition of Readers Entertainment Radio. I'm your host, Ed English, filling in for Sheila, who is on the West Coast this week. Tonight, we're going to be talking about a very unique coming-of-age story with an author who has his own very unique story. Please join me in welcoming the author of We the Animals, Justin Torres. Welcome, Justin.
Thanks. I'm very glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Before we get into the interview, I always like to let the listeners know that they can chat live here. We've got the chat board open. We also have the phone lines open at 646-200-4071. And as always, after the show, you can download the podcast or head on over to readersentertainment.com to check out the blog, which will also have a link to the audio. So, Justin, let's start off by having you tell us just a little bit about We the Animals. How do you describe this story?
I would say that it's a book about a family. It is called a coming-of-age story, and it is in a lot of ways, but I think it's also not your traditional coming-of-age narrative. It's a very short book. It's broken up into kind of like episodic chapters, and there's not that traditional narrative arc, you know, of this progression towards individuation and understanding. It's much more fractured, and I was definitely interested in doing the coming-of-age story in a different way than I've seen it done before.
So give us just a kind of a quick overview of what the story is.
So there's the three brothers, their mother and their father. It's a family kind of under a certain amount of stress. They're teenage parents, and they're kind of doing their best to raise these children. There's a lot of chaos in the family.
With three boys, I'd say.
Yeah, there's a lot of running around. And I was really interested in kind of the collective pack mentality of brothers. And so there's just kind of like these series of little moments that capture the wildness and the violence and the kind of joy and all of that.
Well, tell us about that pack mentality. I mean, I have a brother, an older brother, and an older sister, but there were several years between us.
Mm-hmm.
How did the brothers in your story interrelate?
Yeah, these brothers are very close in age, and I think that they understand each other. You know, they can communicate without using words. They're extremely, extremely tight. And because the parents are not always making the best decisions, and there are moments when they're kind of fending for themselves, but, you know, they're not perfectly equipped to do that. So they struggle. But yeah, the pack mentality, it's like, in my own experience, I found that, you know, I would have these moments of, like, realizing, oh, I have a different sensibility than my siblings. But then many moments I just felt like we were one creature. And so I wanted to try to capture that phenomenon in the book somehow.
So how many siblings do you have?
I have two brothers, yeah. The book definitely parallels my life for sure, yeah.
So you said that there's, you know, a lot, some chaos and things going on, but there's always a sense of family. Do you think that all families have a level of chaos to some degree? And is that what you're trying to get across?
I mean, I hope all families have some chaos. What would life be without it? I mean, the idea of a family that never gets chaotic is kind of terrifying. I'm sure they exist. But yeah, I think that I was definitely trying to capture the ways in which, you know, outside pressures impact a family, and yeah, and there's a little probably a little too much chaos in this family, but magical moments come out of that. I think, you know, I think that, you know, if you have an unusual or atypical upbringing, you really get creative and find creative ways to love each other and express that love.
So it's more like Brady Bunch than Leave It to Beaver.
Yes, I suppose. Yeah.
Well, you know, you're talking about getting creative and growing up in a unique environment. That's what sprung to my mind. And you talked about those non-chaotic families. You know, you try to think of some of those old family shows. Leave It to Beaver was the first one that came to my mind.
Yeah, totally. That crisp, you know,
right.
Pressed. Everybody's doing everything just right all the time.
Right.
I don't know. Brady Bunch a little bit wholesome,
yeah,
for me though, as well.
Well, definitely more chaotic than Leave It to Beaver, I'd say. But now in your story, you have a father figure. You said they were, you know, teenage parents. He obviously loves the family, but can be abusive. What were you hoping that readers would be able to learn from the father figure in We the Animals?
You know, I think that I kind of bristle against like dysfunction and abusive, like people. I've people have described this family as dysfunctional, and I'm just like, what is? I don't know. What is a functional family? Sometimes I feel like there's a false model, you know, to Leave It to Beavers and the Brady Bunches. Like life isn't like that for anybody.
Right. There is no really a normal.
Yeah, there is no normal. And so I think that by writing about the specific ways in which this father loves his family and fails his family as well, and trying to be as specific as possible about this family, I think that you get at something universal. And that is that, you know, we are all doing our best, you know. But, you know.
So give us an example, if you would, of kind of those two polar opposites of the love that he shows and then how he lets them down.
Yeah. Well, he's definitely struggles to control his temper. and he's kind of, you know, popping in and popping out. You know, he's not the most reliable father in the book. And he can be, you know, he can be violent. But all of that, I think, comes from concern. I mean, he's there, you know, he's there throughout the book, and there are definitely moments of tenderness, and moments where he's trying to teach the boys about, you know, their heritage or whatever. Yeah, I mean, I think that when I started writing the book, I think I was kind of angry.
Well, I was going to ask you that because you seem like such, you know, like you're a very jovial, you know, always in a good mood type of person. Where would you, you know, how do you get the motivation? How do you get into that character to write about somebody who can be mean?
Yeah. I mean, I do try to be, you know, jovial in my own life, but I was angry. I was angry when I started writing, and anger is kind of what got me into the chair. But quickly, I kind of had some really amazing mentors and teachers and people who pointed out that you can't just write the anger. You know, you have to get the grace in there. You have to get the tenderness. You have to write all of that. But actually, that was the more difficult stuff for me.
Writing the tender stuff.
To write, yeah, absolutely. The anger stuff actually kind of came easy. But to understand the motivations, you know, it's easy to feel like, you know, to hold grudges against people,
right,
for the moments that they've failed you. But it's more difficult to get into your characters' heads and understand, okay, well, why is this mother acting this way, and why is this father acting this way, and are there other motivations beyond, oh, they're a flawed person? It's like, that's too simple, you know? And so that was difficult.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's easy to talk, you know, to voice the negative. We hear negative about everything all the time, and that's usually all you ever hear.
Yeah.
Is the stuff that goes wrong.
Yeah.
So it's good to hear about the stuff that goes right. Why do you think you found that that was hard?
I haven't been a parent. You know, I mean, this is when you know, as an author, you know, you're really pushing yourself. You know, it might seem like because this book kind of mirrors my own family in some respects that it would be easy for me to just, like, you know, churn this out. But I really wanted to make sure that I was doing justice to each character. And, you know, I had to really imagine experiences and motivations that I haven't had yet or experienced yet myself.
So what ages are the boys in the story?
It moves over time, but at the youngest, they're like 7, you know, 7 to 10, you know.
Okay.
And then by the end of the book, they're well into adolescence.
Okay. Now, is that about the age range that you were with your brothers?
I mean, I still am all ages with my brothers.
That's not exactly what I meant, but the age difference between you and your brothers.
No, I fictionalized the family a lot. You know, I mean, my brothers and I are pretty close in age, but I changed details a lot. Yeah.
So as the boys evolve through the story and they go through these different experiences together, tell us about that evolution and how that affects the family dynamic and the lessons that you wanted people to walk away with through watching the boys grow.
That's a good question. I think that they, as younger boys, you know, the kind of nonverbal communication, that pack mentality that I was just speaking of, worked really well. I think brothers can just intuitively get each other, you know, and the youngest brother, the narrator of this book, definitely has a different sensibility. He's queer, which, I mean, obviously, as a child, nobody really is thinking along those terms, but, you know, he does have a different sensibility than his brothers, and as they move over time into adolescence, that kind of nonverbal communication breaks down. You know, I mean, it's difficult, I think, for some brothers, not all, but it's difficult for some brothers as you move into adolescence and you're starting to have very private experiences and you're figuring yourself out as an individual, and it can be difficult to communicate. And this family and these brothers that kind of fall away from each other, especially the youngest. And so it kind of traces that arc and that dynamic. And as far as lessons, I mean, I don't know that I'm actively in, you know, the business of, like, conceiving of lessons that I want to teach. I wanted to make something beautiful that, you know, certain ugly experiences beautiful. I wanted to make a piece of art, you know, and that resonated. And I think that hopefully it will resonate with
readers. So
it's
more of an overarching kind of lesson that says, even in the chaos, even in the bad times or whatever, there is still, you know, a measure of beauty that grows. Or, I mean, is that what you were going for?
Yeah, I think that's great. I think that's a really nice articulation of a possible lesson to take. Yeah, I mean, I think that if you need something, you know, I think that all readers come to literature with their own needs, and I'm hopeful that I provided enough story here that people will be able to take all different kinds of things away from it.
Well, now, I mean, the cliche is, you know, every cloud has a silver lining. Is that really what this is, or is it deeper than that? Or,
I mean, yeah, I mean, I think that it's every cloud has a silver lining, but you have to do the work to figure out what that is.
You have to open up the cloud.
Yes. Some clouds really don't seem like they do at first. But I think if you do the work, I mean, there's so much to celebrate in this family, you know, if you're looking for it, even though
it takes effort. Relationships do take effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
All kinds of relationships.
Yeah.
So reading this, I'm sure that people are going to wonder, you mentioned that, you know, this is, you know, loosely, you know, kind of relative. Tell us about your history and what brought you to write this book.
Yeah. You know, I was not really thinking that much about writing. I was kind of running around. I had kind of gotten myself into a place where I was a little bit lost. I was, you know, I had dropped out a bunch of colleges. I wasn't too close with my own family anymore. And I think that, you know, a friend of mine was taking a writing class, and I was like, that sounds great. I want to take a writing class. And, you know, this was maybe like 5 years ago, and it just clicked, and I just ran with it. And I think part of what was so powerful for me was that it was a way to, like, kind of get back towards my family or towards that family experience by creating this other family, you know, that is fictionalized. I just kind of was writing these little things, and I think I got really lucky really quick. You know, I started talking to people, and they told me about places like the Iowa Writers' Workshop and, you know, these places where you could get funding and support, and I started applying for things, and pretty soon, you know, I was getting stories placed in magazines and an agent, and it's been like total whiplash. All of a sudden, there's a book, you know, and it's great.
You've written some other smaller works before this.
Yeah, I've written some stories. A lot of the things that I've published are in this book, and I've written things and published things that are not in the book as well. And then I've written a ton of things for the book that never made it in. I wrote.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote lots, an entire storyline that I realized was not going to make it in, and that this had to be a short book. I wanted the end to kind of come as, you know, a jolt, you know, a real shock, and I wanted it to be fractured, so.
Well, you mentioned that it's kind of episodic in a way that you, or is it like different snapshots in time?
Yeah.
Of what the boys are going through?
Yeah, yeah. So it's not like each chapter is not, you know, like causal in a traditional, you know, the traditional novel. You know, it's much more fractured than that.
If the younger brother is the narrator, is it more kind of reminiscent of he's thinking back and this one time and then this other time?
Yeah, but there's not that like kind of narrative voice.
He's narrating from in the moment, though.
He's narrating from in the moment, yeah. But as an adult, but very, very kind of immediately capturing what a child would be thinking. Yeah.
So did you write this in first person then?
Yep. I mean, it's first person, and a lot of it is collective. A lot of it is we, you know, especially in the mm-hmm. beginning of the book, you know, it's kind of, you know, we wanted more. We. And then it moves into the individual I. Kind of each chapter kind of has that mini arc itself. So it's like we, and then it kind of ends with this I. And then the next moment, the next chapter, it's we again. And that was kind of like, I felt that way in my own experience, that I would have these surfacings, you know, of like, this is me and I'm different. And then,
so in each instance, he's talking about the collective, but then, you know, getting something individual out of the experience.
Yeah. 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 And yeah.
Did you find it hard to write in first person?
It's where I started. I think that it's no, I didn't. I think that it's an interesting perspective for me to write from. I've written some things in third, and I've written some things in second person, and I think you kind of, you know, you pick what fits the material the best. You know, I think that I wanted immediacy. I wanted this to be really kind of like, you know, punchy and like you're there and it's the moment. And I think that first person does that really, really well.
It's more so a curiosity of mine talking to people who write in first person all the time versus, you know, always writing in third person versus, you know, like you said, what fits the material, you know. I just always like to ask because some people say it's harder to write in first person than it is in third. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm at Stanford now doing another kind of fellowship program, and you know, and being at Iowa. I mean, I've been around a lot of people. I've had these conversations a lot, and some people, you know, they really just feel like third person is like the only way to go, and it's the only thing they're ever going to write in, and the nuts will never write in first person. I'm much more of a whatever suits the moment.
So you said there was a lot of stuff that didn't make it into this book. Are you thinking about, you know, maybe having a volume 2 kind of thing or using that material?
Yeah. I mean, this is kind of the big, heavy decisions that I'm making right now because I'm just getting started on the next book. And I'm still interested in, like, writing from personal experience and, like, but it's so early in the next project that I really don't know what shape it will take and if it will have any relationship at all to this last book. I'm really glad to be writing about adults and not writing about kids anymore. I mean, you get to a point, it was great, you know, while it lasted, but you get to a point where you're just like, God, I'm trapped in this perspective and I can't wait to be done. So
I hear that from elementary school teachers. So you do have another project that you're working on? I mean, are you actively working on it, or are you just kind of in the conceptual stages? You know, what's next on your plate?
Yeah, I have another project that I'm working on. I'm working on the next book. It's so soon, you know, and I write really, really, really slowly. So I have, like, I really can't say much about it. And also I think I'm a little bit superstitious. Like, I don't want to say too much because then maybe I won't want to do it anymore. But I wrote 2 stories over the last year because, you know, the book, you know, gets sold and I know that it's going to be published and then there's kind of this whole year before it comes out. And so
you're
I wrote 2 stories.
Time.
Yeah, yeah. And it was really great because one of them was just in the New Yorker and the other one's going to be in Harper's in October. And I really was kind of terrified that I, you know, nobody would be interested in when I wasn't writing about children or, you know, this book was a fluke or, you know, this is a one-off. And so to get that kind of, you know, validation and that it's like, no, people like it when I write about other things as well. It was really important to me. Yeah.
Well, now another question that I like to ask of writers, and just another curiosity of mine: have you always written? You know, since you were a kid, did you find that was an outlet that you enjoyed? Or
yeah, I wrote a lot as a child. I remember we had this like kind of word processor thing that somebody gave us. I don't even know where it came from or how it ended up in our house, but it was like. It was like a little bit fancier than a typewriter, but it's basically a typewriter. And I just loved it. You know, I loved the way that the words looked on the page. Like, it just seemed really official to me. And I would just write, all kinds of stories. And then I kind of stopped for a while. I kind of fell off of a lot of things. I also painted a lot, and I kind of just abandoned all of that, and I was kind of running around like a madman. And then returning to writing was just it was wonderful, and I'm really, really glad I did.
So being away from it, was that something that you maybe you thought, you know, I'm trying to, you know, find a direction, find a, you know, a path for my life. Let me give this another try. Or was it kind of more random where it's like you sat down and the story started coming out one day?
Yeah, I think it was more like, I mean, I was living in New York. I had, you know, I was just scrambling to make ends meet. I mean, it's, you know, I was completely, completely broke, and it takes a lot to, you know, stay above water in the city. So, and I was, you know, often underwater. So it was kind of just random, like, beautiful moment when I sat down and it was there and it was coming, and it hasn't dried up yet, so keeping my fingers crossed.
That's a good thing. Well, I mean, you talked about having some stories published. You were telling me before the show that you've been doing interviews all day long, so you've got some people can look to see what you said, the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
And what was the other one?
Entertainment Weekly. I talked to the San Francisco Chronicle, and there are many more to come. I've been really blessed with the reception, and I have an amazing publicist, and it's really overwhelming because you sit at a desk alone with your thoughts every day, you know, and you're just kind of typing away, and I don't talk to that many people. And then, you know.
And now you're being bombarded with questions.
And now I'm being bombarded. It's quite a transformation. It's like immersion, absolute immersion. But
trial by fire.
Yes, exactly, exactly.
Well, we always like to let our listeners know where they can go to find out more about you and about your book and where you hang out at online.
Yeah, yeah. I think that somebody, a dear friend and kind soul, decided I needed a Facebook fan page. I think that that's what happened in the last, like, couple hours. So there should be some kind of Facebook fan page, either for me or the book. I think it's for the book. I myself am on Facebook as well. I'm easy to find. And I have a website coming. A friend of mine and my boyfriend are, like, collaborating, and soon I should have a website up.
Is that going to be JustinTorres.com? Or?
I think JustinTorres.com has been taken.
Okay. Oh, bummer.
I think it's Justin-Torres.com.
Okay.
I'm pretty positive that that is what it is. So.
Okay. So we'll keep our eyes open for that. Are you a Twitterer or a tweeter?
I'm not a tweet. I'm a bit of a technophobe. I'm not that, you know, conversant in the world of digital online social media. I'm trying to get better. It seems like the direction that things are headed. But I haven't done Twitter yet, no.
Well, it looks like we're coming to a close here. Justin, I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight on Readers Entertainment Radio.
Great. Thank you for having me. This has been really fun.
It has. It's like a phone conversation. That's what I always say. And I definitely want to thank our listeners for joining us here at Readers Entertainment Radio as well. Don't forget to download the podcast when the show's done, or stop by readersentertainment.com. Look for the blog post about tonight's shows. Feel free to leave a comment. And I'm your host, Ed English. Thanks for joining us tonight.
This show brought to you by Circle of Seven Productions, www.cosproductions.com. Please be sure to subscribe and welcome to our circle.